So, okay, so just to continue on here.
Yeah, Ben, you can take off your coat if you want to get relaxed.
I think I will.
Yeah, this is wrong. Take off your coat. We go relax here.
You know what? Really. Okay, so just to kind of finish up here, we sort of covered this a lot. So the assumption will be, first of all, that storage is charged by the solar. It could also be charged by the grid, and that would result in something that would actually impose a cost on the grid off peak, right? But we're not going to be looking at that. We're just looking at charged by solar. And then there's some excess solar, and this gets charged up. There's going to be excess solar still to the grid. The storage, as we mentioned, is going to be dispatched for the system peak load rather than willy-nilly whenever it wants to. And then the analysis says, to take into account these losses, that you know, say 20%, and that we're going to assume that there's no curtailment in this case. So all of these, and each of these assumptions could be a different, you know, case if you want to.
When you talk about storage as dispatch, are you talking about having a utility be able to control that storage?
So we're not going to be getting into like the details of how this is done, but yes, the sort of the presumption is that this would be optimized dispatch for utility as if it was utility control.
So even we would be able to do that through our meter. Okay.
Yeah. Just another principle here. So value isn't dependent on the rate class. So you know, a kilowatt hour delivered to the grid, it doesn't know whether it came from a residential customer, or commercial, or industrial, or what have you. It's just going to be valued as a kilowatt hour. That said, you know, so larger systems do tend to provide more benefits. You know, if you have a 1 megawatt system, you know, it's going to be better maintained. And it's probably designed a little, you know, with a little more care, that kind of thing. I don't know. So there may be additional benefits, but we're just going to say that it's not a system. And by the way, so the larger system also would tend to have more distribution cost impacts as well, but we've sort of discussed that already.
Yep.
So here's the framework that we're proposing. Is there?
That previous slide, the second bullet, it depends on when that customer's set actually peaks, right? There's incremental benefits for customers that peak during our peak. Okay?
Right, but again.
So it's not the same utility benefit on just a uniform residential, commercial, or industrial customer. Because they peak at different times.
So let me, that's a good point. So let me sort of, maybe I should rephrase this a little bit. So the loads are obviously different. You know, your residential load shape is going to look really different than your commercial load shape. And so if you were looking at, well, what's the value out here, you would get a different value because that load shape is going to be different. So that's why, to sort of simplify it, so we're going to put our meter right here before the load. So it's kind of like you could think of this as sort of two separate transactions, if you will, the generation and the consumption.
And there's also demand charges on larger customers.
Right.
And when you use energy storage coupled with a demand charge, there's the ability to lower that demand charge, and then you have a kind of like a win-win with the utility and the customer.
Exactly, and that might be one of the incentives for a customer to want storage. They could help offset some of their demand charge and help, you know, sort of peak that way. That's a benefit, again, from kind of the retail point of view. It's not a benefit. I should also, you can see how this gets kind of complicated as you get into the nitty-gritty, but if you were to dispatch that battery to avoid a demand charge, that would be sensible for the customer to do that. But if their peak usage didn't coincide with the system peak, you're kind of not really providing that same benefit. So that's another study. What could be done is, okay, well, every customer has a different, its own load shape, really. Every customer has its own peak. And if you wanted to dispatch the storage on the customer side to avoid demand charges, you're going to come up with a different answer than this study, because this study was dispatched to the benefit of the grid. Okay, but another way to approach this. So the proposed framework, the value would be calculated for the net generation that we talked about before the loads, if that makes sense. Regardless of rate class, it's for an incremental resource, solar or solar plus storage resource installed this year. Like the next increment of capacity coming in. It's going to assume that the production has the same shape as the aggregate solar fleets, or the aggregate solar plus storage fleets, as the case may be. It's going to be looking at the current penetration level. Now, this is going to be important, as we get more and more storage online in future years, if that happened, we had that discussion about 2 kilowatt hours of storage for every kilowatt. Maybe as you have more and more storage, maybe you're going to need a little more, right? And that's going to be more expensive, right? So to solve that 1 kilowatt peak, instead of having 2 kilowatt hours, you might have 4 kilowatt hours. So that's going to increase the cost of storage as we get more and more penetration. But for now, we're just going to say 2 hours of storage is what we need. We're going to say it's on the distribution system, it's not on the transmission. And the point was made previously, it's very location dependent. Another effect that you can have, especially for larger resources, is these calculations are going to say you have a benefit of avoiding losses, right? Because you're siting that resource near your node. But if you have a large system the power has to go through the line and up through the transformer and out across the island where the load is, you really don't get that loss benefit as well. So that's kind of another subtlety. And this study, maybe we could make note of that. The first cut here is we're going to say, okay, you're offsetting a local load, you're adding customer site, you're on the distribution system. We're going to look at a steady period of and asset life of 25 years, and we're going to express this value as a 25 years long lifespan. And that's that flat blue line that I tried before. So I just want to be clear, this is just airing the laundry before we get started here, and this is what we're going to do. So if there's major objections that we need to consider a different framework or something, we're open to that. Okay, so we're going to get into the technical analysis now. Now, we say kilowatt, but a kilowatt means different things depending on how you size this up. So we have to talk about rating conventions, and this is a little boring, I'm sorry, but we're going to talk about megawatts or kilowatts AC with losses. That's how we do our ratings for these studies. But it's totally arbitrary. We don't have to do this. We could use a different rating convention. But if we start with, say, to show the calculation. So we start with 10 megawatts DC. That means each of these modules has an SPC rating, you add them all up. And you start with that. And then you're going to have a D rate factor, which corresponds to, these things aren't operating in laboratory conditions. They're actually in the real world. They take on a different temperature than was tested at. We're going to have low inverter efficiency. We're going to have other loss factors. And this is soiling. This is mismatched losses and things like that. So when you're all said and done, that 10 megawatts becomes 7.27, at least by these assumptions. Okay. Now we can call this a 10 megawatt system or a 7.27 megawatt system, and it's the same system. It's kind of arbitrary. But we have to decide something. And so these are different rating conventions that have been used. And we just have to be clear and kind of lay it out. And that's the point here. You could have the same system, and that system is producing, the same energy. This is one system, but four different rating conventions. when the capacity factor could range from 17% to 22%. And so that's the one we're going to use, or that we're proposing to use, I guess. And not because it gives you the better capacitor factor, it's because we make this arbitrary decision, and it's kind of nice in a sense because the 7.27 sort of corresponds pretty closely to the maximum AC you're actually going to get from the grid. Okay? So that's why we use that one. The generation profile, it depends very much by orientation, as we saw. So if you're an east-facing system in red, if you face the east, it's going to ramp up quickly in the morning, and it's going to go down slowly in the afternoon. If you're a west-facing system, it's going to ramp up slowly in the morning, and then go down quickly in the afternoon. You could have tracking systems that go quickly, pretty much flat during the day, and then they go down. And each of these profiles has a different capacity effect, right? So the shape of those curves are important, and so what we want to do is we think of the fleet of resources as being one of those bins. It might be south facing or west or east, and then they're going to have different tilt angles as well. And each of those cases have this different profile. Okay. So what do we select? Well, we select the whole, we have this as weighting factors, we say. Here's what the fleet looks like. Talking to Jeff, he says most of these systems are, most of the roofs here are pretty flat, so it's kind of, maybe this isn't that important here, because if you have a flat roof, you're going to, you know, pretty much face them south with a small tilt angle. And so I'm kind of expecting most of them are going to be these south motel systems. But there is going to be a diversity here that we have to factor in. So we're trying to put together this generation profile. Just talking solar now, it's the output of this marginal resource, this 1 kilowatt of additional solar capacity, 1 kilowatt. And this profile, this hourly, 8760 hours per year profile, is going to have the units of kilowatt hours of generation per hour, or the kilowatts for that hour, the average kilowatts over an hour per kilowatt AC. If that makes sense. So part of the first part of the analysis is to create some shape, some 8760 hours of output of this research. This resource, whatever it is, and we're going to scale this as well to the unit. This is important, just our experience, taking this whole fleet approach is important for the following reason. This is a thing we did back in 2012 for San Diego Gas and Electric, and we see in red the hourly load. This is the load on the peak day, September 14th. Okay, well, if what we assume for our solar resource, let's just say, well, let's put a system downtown San Diego, which is the big city in our service territory, of course, and we're going to say point it south 30 degree tilt, and we get this curve right here. They could say, well, okay, we did our study here on this curve, and it's got an effective capacity of 56% of its rating. But if we look at the whole fleet, this is across the whole service territory, not just downtown San Diego, but actual systems as built across the service territory. 17,000 systems we model, actually, using our solar anywhere data. So it's quite a big modeling exercise. But some of them were inland 10 miles, some of them were further north, some were south, some were had different orientations, some were east-facing, some were like ideal spot on latitude. Somewhere, there's the whole mix of systems. But when you add up all 17,000 together, you get something like this light blue curve. And that's our fleet view output. And the capacity is lower, right? You see, so we start with sort of an ideal system of 56. But we really, to be fair, we have to consider the effect of the fleet as well. again, maybe one, maybe that, maybe they're going to be really close to each other because they're all kind of ideal, and I don't know, we'll just have to see. And the other thing is, this is all modeled, so if we did try to model the same system here using, so part of the modeling is making sure you take the solar data from the same hour that you take the load data. It's totally lined up, right? But if you take, you know, typical data, you might have, this shows, this one here is the output of a system on September 14th, 1968, because 1968 was used mainly typical September. That doesn't work. So you have time correlated data. And what we're going to do for Guam is not do any modeling at all. We're going to take the actual system output and as measured, and we're just going to fit them all together and create a complete state weather. So here it shows our two scenarios. This is the island load of Guam, and we're going to need that data for all the hours for the island from the GPA. But this is taken from the report at the top hour. And it shows our solar-only scenario, which is going to look something like this, the dotted line. And it also shows the solar line, which is the solar plus storage. Okay, so when you combine the solar and the storage, what you have to think about, well, how are we dispatching the solar? And so this does a couple things. It's charging using this energy early in the morning. This is stored energy that was taken from early in the morning. And we do that because our value is going to be lower in the morning than the afternoon. So rather than using this energy for charging, we're going to use this energy. And then it also shows that it includes the losses. So it looks a little strange that the solid orange line, something like that would probably be what we use for our solar plus storage case. And again, this is just one example day. We're going to do it for all days of the year. We do a load match analysis. That's the effective load carrying capability. We're going to do it for both solar only, that one curve, and we're going to do it for this other curve. And we're going to define the effective load carrying capability. This is really important in the capacity benefit calculation, right? That's the load match factor that we talked about. And the way we're going to do it, just for simplicity, we're going to say, let's look at the top 100 load hours of the year, you know, which is going to be, you know, that's the top hour, and then maybe it'll include that one, and a few others, and it's going to be over several, you know, days and a few couple of months, maybe, I don't know. We're going to take these very top hours, and the output of those top 100 hours, we're going to average the system, and that will be our capacity, maybe it's 20%, 98%, or whatever it comes up to. We're going to do this for a year, the year ending December 31st, 2016. And again, to line this data up, we're going to ask for GPA is the utility load profile for every hour, 2016. And we're going to ask for from Micronesia Renewable Energy, the solar fleet production. And we're going to put these together side by side. And so they need to be time synchronized. And hopefully this is like clean data. And we're going to ask that that GPA is just kind of clear. So you know, there's some kind of confusing things we can have, but we need to identify this. When you have a timestamp, is that hour ending or hour beginning? And we're going to have, is this standard time or daylight savings time? We're going to get into our loss savings methodology, and I won't go through all this in detail, but essentially what we're going to ask is inputs from the utility are the peak transmission losses, average transmission losses, peak distribution losses. Again, every line is different, okay? We're going to say on average, you know, for a typical distribution, like what's the peak loss and what's the average loss. So this is the peak is a higher value than average, kind of right definition, right? And the hourly loads, and we're going to calculate a couple of different loss savings factors, one for the energy and one for the capacity. And now we'll get into economic methods. So here's where we actually get into like the different benefit categories. Okay, so we've done our technical analysis, we've got our loads and our production. And so we look at avoid the energy costs, and this is pretty straightforward. We're going to ask for the marginal costs of production from the utility for every hour of that same 1 year period. And what we're going to do is for every hour, we're going to take the power generation, and we're going to multiply the output times the marginal energy cost. It's pretty straightforward. And then for future years, we're going to assume a certain escalation rate. And we're going to assume that that increases basically. We're going to assume that basically diesel is the fuel that we're displacing. There's other fuels, but you know, generally speaking, that's you know, that would make it sort of simplified. And so the diesel fuel that price escalation seems like the right one. It's really a combination of things, but that's what we would use. And then we're going to love this over the study period. Generation capacity cost, I mean, this is going to be simple also. We're going to ask GPA to provide the cost of peaking capacity. And we're going to look for not just the cost of generation, but like if you were to put in something from your past studies or whatever, whatever the cost is for the next unit of generation, that fee. And then we take that capacity exit. We'll use that same cost as the basis of our avoided cost, but we're going to multiply it by this penalty if solar is if there's no match, you know, you're going to get a low capacity value. If there's a good match, say in a storage case, you know, you can be able to do better there, I don't know. And then we're going to optimize. Next category is distribution costs. And we talked a little bit earlier about the actual increase in distribution costs that DER could impose on the system. And we can include that if that data is available. But there's also, potentially this could also defer distribution costs as well. So, and again, all of this depends on how well this resource lines up with the distribution peak. If you're really well lined up, you know, you may have new lines you're adding or whatever, and if there's solar on those lines or PER on those lines, you know, you can help save that cost as well. It's worth noting, like, there's some cost with the substations and the lines and all of that. Those are all already built, and there's no way we're going to avoid that cost because it already exists. So we're talking about off in the future. What's going to happen 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And if there are new plant expansions, you know, then or replacements over that time period for 25 years, we want to include those. Another category is an RPS. So the island has certain RPS goals. Well, to meet those goals, you have to procure renewable energy. And so if you build a utility scale plant, and that purpose of building that plant is to meet the island's goals. Well, our distributed solar is going to help. You know, you won't have to procure as much solar resource. Right? So the way we calculate that is simply we look at the capital cost for a utility scale plant, which is going to be kind of the lowest cost option. So it's a little more conservative, right? We're assuming with GPA would not go out and put lots of small distribution and small systems in. So there's the cost of that plant. And we're also going to assume no storage. Again, a conservative assumption here. And basically, we just calculate what the levelized cost of that plant would be if we add it to the avoided costs. Next one is unit dispatch savings. And the We've done this before and call it market pricing. So if you have a wholesale energy market, you're actually procuring it from the system. So that's why it says price. But it's the same thing works for the marginal energy cost. So you see, as the load increases, your marginal costs are going to go up, and there's some kind of relationship there. Okay? And so if you put in, it's just for talking purposes, to say you start generating solar. Well, what's it going to do? It's going to do two things. It's going to reduce the amount of load on the grid, and it's going to reduce the marginal energy costs. Okay? And so both of those things really need to be taken into account. If you remember, our energy calculation was this one here, this blue box. It says the load goes down at that energy price. This is a benefit that actually lowers the cost to all the customers. Okay? It's going to be a very small price, but it's over a lot of load. We did this study for PG&E in 2014, and these are market prices, but the principle is the same. Every hour, these are the prices at PG&E. January 2014, and they're all over the board, but they follow a pattern. So we create this best fit curve, and we say, you know, if you're trying to predict, you know, hourly price, it's going to basically follow along that curve. And so if we have a kilowatt of capacity, we, you know, here's the load for that hour. Well, you know, the slope, it's not huge, but it's something, right? And it's going to go down a little bit, so the price is going to go down very small, but we multiply it by the load of that hour. So that's basically the method there. We calculate that curve fit, and we, with and without the ER, and then we sum for all the hours, and you know what the savings would be for that kilowatt of resource. All right. Another category is the avoided fuel price uncertainty. So why does Guam want to be less dependent on external sources of fuel imports? Well, one is because it costs a lot of money. And we've already taken that into account. That's our energy benefit. Okay? We've done that one. But the other thing it does is it exposes us to the risk associated with fluctuating prices in the future. So we can do our energy benefit and assume a nice smooth escalation rate of our fuel prices, but we really don't know what the price is going to be. Who can tell me what the price of the pump is going to be 10 years from now? I don't know, right? That's the uncertainty we're having. We know we're going to pay. We can estimate it. But we really have no idea, you know? And so to the extent that we're dependent on this foreign fuel supply, in this case, diesel, right? Because diesel is our displaced fuel. To the extent that that's an uncertainty, that's a volatile price, that comes at a certain cost. And so this is a method that we use to sort of quantify what that benefit is going to be. Well, GP already does some mitigation of diesel prices, right, through some short-term hedging. But this is a 25-year resource, and nobody does that. But we're going to say, well, what if you could get like 25 years of hedging, right? How would you calculate that? And so we're going to reduce the exposure to fuel price risk on the island grid. And this is how we do it. We say, you know, this goes from 1 to 25, and for every year we have a forecast of our fuel price, okay? So we calculate based on the heat rate of the plant, on the margins, we have an estimate of what that cost is going to be, right? Then we use the utility discount rate, and we take the present worth, and that's our essentially our energy benefit, sort of done a different way, but that's what we think of as the energy value. But if we use a different discount rate, the risk-free, this is like U.S. Treasury instruments, we can use a lower discount rate. If we had this much funding set aside today, and we invested it in risk-free investments, we would be able to pay for that fuel in year N in the future, right? So if we had that and we set that aside, that is the cost to guarantee a fuel delivery at year N. And we do this for every year N in around 25 years. And so we can kind of think of this as two different values. One is the energy value, and one is the long-term 25-year hedge value. And basically, that tells us. So we're using our future prices. These markets really only go for a few years. In the past, we've done natural gas, and the market's maybe 12 years out or so. So we have to escalate those, and there's a little trickery that we have to do. But basically, fuel prices and the government securities yields. And for each year, we're going to calculate the avoided fuel costs using the heat rate. And we're going to discount that two ways. One's with the utility discount rate, one's with the risk-free discount rate. And the difference is going to be that hedge value, and we're going to levelize over our 25 years using the risk-free rate as well. Sorry, this is probably a lot of...
No, we're just giving you a chance to go through the different we have some thoughts.
So. Okay. So that's kind of the main categories that we're kind of covering. We'd like to talk now about the proposed components. So this is kind of a study in a snapshot. We went through each of these: energy costs, generation capacity costs, distribution capacity costs, avoided RPS costs, unit dispatch savings, and avoided fuel price uncertainty. So those would be the categories. If we also got the distribution cost impact, we put that in, which is basically a negative value. It would counteract the effect of this. We could do that if that's available. And then we have two scenarios, solar only and solar plus 2 hectares of storage. So this is just, for the solar only, we use that methodology for both, but this is kind of indicating the fact that I think these two components for the solar only would really kind of be zero. You know, we're not going to get much capacity from solar only. And then our data request. So what I'm expecting, and we can put this in,
can you pick up a speaker for at government office?
Yeah, I think you're correct. Best we put into a RFI format.
Okay.
So our request, and then we can make sure we can get exactly what we need.
Okay, but some of it will be like hourly data.
Yeah, okay. Just loaded, and then what we can provide you with that, you know.
Okay.
We'll provide you as best we can to fit your needs of what we have, and what information we can do that.
Okay, so just item by item with the...
Well, it's similar to what we do in the rate items, so that we're used to that when we get it in house, make sure, you know, we do finance, engineering, and everything, and we can provide you this information.
Okay, yeah, we can work that
out. The safe time, I don't know whether it's something you can provide us, the part of your solar profile or whatever.
I
can definitely
provide that to you.
So
John, you were speaking at it one time. Did you get that with anybody else? And you wanted it on an hourly basis, or how did you want the reports?
We did it 15 minutes. We asked for 15 minutes.
Okay, well, you're getting that off of your meters.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. And you did that for all 1,500 customers?
We do it for all 50,000 customers, yeah.
No, but I mean on the solar, the people that are actually exporting back to your grid, you did that on a 15-minute, on about the 1,500 net meter customers?
Our net metering is structured to take data profiles every 15 minutes.
Right, if you're taking generation or exporting generation.
Regardless of what kind
you
of...
You can back up. Is that possible to get some of that on the some of the solar generation that we can't provide, Ben? Just put it on the list.
We'll have to take a look at that because that's our sugar profile. So again, I need some advice in that. Put a note on what you want so that you can get your.
Okay.
I get it.
Yeah. Because I can give you the 900, but then maybe they can give you the rest.
I mean, it's something that works, so at least we see what we use, and it also gives us an idea of the profile, so then as we think about this ourselves, we can look at what value they're all about, and all of that.
So getting a good budget, and we don't need every solar system, we just need a good representative sample.
Just go with them.
And the other point is, again, we're really not interested in getting the net load. Because we don't know what the solar contribution to that is. We only know the solar output.
That's it. Are you exporting that back to the grid? Yeah.
Okay. We have delivered to the grid and delivered from the grid.
Okay, so we're separated out.
Some of the things that I can go through, I need for you to think about, so that you can start avoiding down the road this issues that more disclosure type of scenario. You're showing us what you're going to do. And so now I'd like to note some of the things that we should consider thinking about this so that we try to adjust for it as best as possible. I'm not sure that we can totally adjust to it. But. So, for example, let's talk about the diesel. No? I can agree if we look out the 25-year period. Let's talk about, today is not diesel, but today is RFO and diesel. The next thing is, we talk about capacity, right? So we're moving forward to capacity down the road in, say, 4 or 5 years to put in a new power plant. So there's combined cycle or others. Certainly, first of all, the fire on diesel fuel. So we have a profile of what that may look like. Because the other side of the equation includes the efficiency of the power plant. So you see, the other side of the equation includes we're only talking about 3 to 5% volume of diesel fuel that we utilized in the past. Now we're going to talk about 100% volume, so there are some changes to the prices also, right? Because again, like you're trying to do risk and certainty, we're trying to make this as matching the curve as possible, right? So again, the other part of the equation is that we are going back out for two types of things, fuel type. One is diesel fuel, and the second part is natural gas. So therefore, and why is that? We do not want to ever go to the impact of $100 a barrel of fuel again, which potentially, this type of a scenario will bring us there, right? So this is where our future is diesel fuel, very efficient combined with our generation, and then at this point, if oil gets to about this level, $70 a barrel or so, energy becomes feasible within the energy scenario, so that we can try to levelize it at a certain point over the future. So that again, that's the intellectual what our plan is. Otherwise, there'll be again different. Oh, you didn't think about this or that side, right? So we're going to review that.
Okay.
We're heading on that. The other thing is that we also. Like you talk about hedging, we have been going off a utility scale generation. We do have some bids now that are actually below our current bid, and that's 25 years based on a 1% escalator. So as you can see now that that's part of the mix, right? So again, we'll let you advise you that. So again, you get a better quote because 2016. It's not really the best profile to take until you just escalate it out, right? Because 2016 was actually one of our worst years. Which is, you may know, we lost our generators, our baseload generators in August 2015. And 2016 was a lot of fixing things, running every though, if it provides you and you can see if you get reader or not at that
point. Do you think it would be a good idea to do, say, 2015 or maybe a few years?
Yes, we'll take a look and see and maybe give you both and then see whether, you know, we come to something that, at least as a base, as we both know, if it doesn't be projected this way, right, the base is quite important in the initial use.
Okay.
The other thing that we'd like to know is that we also have some storage, no? That are here. And that secondly, when we accept more utility scale, we also talking about shifting load shifting. So therefore the storage powers that be. So we'll probably can give you an idea of what we believe that potential cost would be. Because when you compare it 10 cents, you know, on residential storage, does that really make sense versus perhaps a 2-3 cents energy storage by the utility? And having that covered, that's a, you know, that type of a scenario. So again, we must take a look at, you know, if we're going to look at try and understand and try and come to an agreement as to where the island is going to go, what are the things that we, you know, plan, and we've been very good at implementing a step at a time, maybe a little delay here and there, but again, so far we've been moving forward with our plan. And then again, just some other key things to be that's important, and that's why when you look at the current data versus what it is in the future. Today we have to run combustion turbines in the daytime. And why do we have to do that? There's still two primary reasons. One, the NRG plan that we put on the 25 megawatt, it goes like this, depending on what time of the day or what clouds or this scenario, right? So that we're putting a 16 megawatt to smoothing that. The other part is we also put in a 24 megawatt in the system. So you have a 25 megawatt machine out there and about 14, 15 megawatts of medium, which we hope the second 24 now. So there are some cost impact already with that, running the combustion turbines or putting in the batteries to handle that. And again, we'll explain that as to where we are on those scenarios.
When you say you'll explain that, would that be a part of the data request?
We'll provide some.
Oh, okay.
So you can just remind me and ask me.
Okay.
Ask us that way. What energy storage? What energy storage is GPA putting in, or plan, or are in the process of putting in?
Okay.
So we tell the world that. Plan means we're going to accept a lot of utility renewals, but we also know that we have to mitigate it with load shifting storage. When do we go off for that? Maybe another year and a half. Because the utility scales are going to come in for about 2 years from now. There's also a phase three that we're going up for another 35-45 megawatts of renewable. And in that phase three, that will have also some batteries, and we're considering whether we're going to attempt within that one to provide load shifting. And that's our partnership with the Navy that we're working on. So we'll outline, maybe you can ask us, what are our renewable plans, and where are we with those plans?
Do you have a resource plan already completed for that?
Well, the resource plan was the total, and it's more, but now, as far as the resources, it's take renewables, not as far as the system. So this is where now the implementation is coming. So again, the phase one, which we installed, phase two, which we have to rebuild and improve batteries because of the intermittency, and then the phase three, which is the Navy lease project, that we have all power. No? And then we can note also what we're doing, because we are studying that how much more integration would there be in the system, including, you know, the impacts to the different distribution circuits and all that. Because I agree with your statement earlier, really you can judge it based on the Hawaii San Diego and all of that. Guam, less than 3% penetration, and we have like this scenario. And why is that? Because on the grid, you have thousands of whatever generators. In Hawaii, you have several, you know, about 100, or in Oahu, you have 100 generators already running. In Guam, you have 4 to 6 running. And there's no steam, and there the two steam plants that are 40 years old know that, so they can't keep up with the intermittency. Therefore, there's an issue that we have today. So we are mitigating that in the future. And these are the things that I wanted to share with you, what those the new capacity generation that will help us now to operate that basis. Certainty, stabilization, okay, that's what we mentioned. Okay, the hours of storage, again, what we can do is provide you, see whether we can pull up some areas that will sort of give an idea as to what kind of storage may be necessary, because we may say 2 hours, but, you know, I can show you today that we are in Esther, and now everything, the peak is actually shifting from 7, between 7 and 8, and really, we start at 6 o'clock morning, you know, and then we don't drop off until about 9 or 10 o'clock at night, so shifting, having more
shifting better?
Yeah, it's actually shifting a little bit between 7 and 8, mostly 7, but some of the 8, you know. That. So you can provide you that and information.
That one grant that we showed, that I think you want from last industry work. What was it? What was the date?
It was 2015.
2015.
I think 2015 got, if that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Then you got that right over
there.
So that
part
of that.
Yeah, I just got it right off there.
Yeah,
so
I got it.
But again, we, you know, we have a lot of different.
Black and Beach was July 2016.
July 2016.
Yeah.
Is that the date?
Yeah.
But the data in that report, I don't know where that originated from.
This is the one that was distributed.
That low data.
Yeah, and we'll provide you, you can do this in the end. That gives you an idea of the demand for food. For 246, that's not a picture number.
Yeah.
246 for the same period around April of each year.
April?
For the past 3 years. You see in here the curve. Now, this is the energy production here. Just for the recently to give you. But the demand is the red one. But again, we can provide you.
Okay.
I just need these back here. I want to make sure it's all confirmed.
Okay.
But we will provide you. But you can see that you can see our load.
Yeah.
And you know, and you can see it's how we do tend to shift so and so. So as we generate more, and that's what you are.
Yeah.
You know, this is the initial generation that they had, and this is all over the map.
And it's also the one location, spread.
Yeah, but I can show you also. I can show you also. I made some presentations in advance. We could provide you that to show you that. Here's the. Here's profiles of different people. At 21 kilowatt production in the day. There's a 4 kilowatt environment. There's a 4, another 2 kilowatt. And I'm sure you have some of this in there.
Oh, we have all that. Yeah. We have
so a lot of this. The whole thing, even though it's on the island, for the same day, different parts of the island, and that's what I'm seeing. And
right.
Also, at the same time, it's showing me. Showing us what their consumption is in the evening. So when you talk about shifting, then that's the amount of kilowatt hours. So maybe what we can do now is for firm debt versus a 1 kilowatt for two, and maybe 1 kilowatt for three or four, and that would be the number that probably best fit the year, no? Mm-hmm. And on the island, on the,
and they're swinging together.
Okay, so those are mostly my comments on this, and again, I just wanted to just be upfront as to what are some of the things that, that we want to make sure you take a look at as we go, as you went through that scenario of what you're planning to do.
Yes, sir.
But if you just get it done and clarify, then you can provide this, all this information for you, rather than a total reference to what's going on.
When we make the request, can we can we also just open it up and say, is there anything else that you'd like to share that you think about?
That's right. Yeah. That way we just have the packets and then we have, and then we don't keep on the same deities. And then again, once we do that, then there can be some additional
discussions
between yourself and, of course, what John and the board, someone in his team will be available to answer whatever additional questions you have. At least if we start with that, then at least you know, gives you a better overview as to where we are today, where we're heading, and where we're heading. As a result of a 25-year period, what may be the best. What are the actual voided costs or the utility, as we said, utility, voided costs instead of what are the other potential servers to society or environment or anything else.
Right. And I do have to say that I really appreciate you, you know, being willing to engage and provide
this data. And I think that, you know, we want to get a point to where we can agree on something that we can work with, not two ends of the spectrum. We just want to get together and get something and move on. Because for one thing, net metering is not all that goes on here, right? It's a part of the total picture. And so as we move forward, I have to present to our commission what are the what we believe are the voided and this and that. It becomes beyond that, it becomes a policy code, but at least from our perspective as management, that's why we have not even made our final recommendation on the Black and Beach report. Because the Black and Beach report is not a management report of the GPA, but it's shared with everyone. So then at that point, once we get all of this information together, then we will provide our recommendation.
Thank you very much,
yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You've met all the players here. They're all in the room. John is our CFO. Beatrice is our assistant general manager for administration. And Graham is our legal counsel.